Today is Sunday, May 30th, 2021, and I don't know, the bad news seems to catch up with me too often. I was notified last night that Dr. Bernard Cabacal died. I believe it was Friday or Thursday. The body is being transported back to the States. The funeral is only tomorrow. I imagine the reason is to be buried next to his wife, because Bernie came in Aliyah. The name Dr. Bernard Cabacal may not mean too much to the newcomers, but for the old timers, he was one of the top cancer specialists in the New York area. And I don't think there was a finer Jew, a finer human being alive than Bernie, and with the help of his wife, Seel, Zichronim Levracha. We bonded together. I taught his daughters, but we bonded together on the Russian issue. Bernie's family, if you know the history of Chabad, his great-great-grandfather was the Chabad Shaliach to Minsk. You'll see the name Cabacal in history books on Chabad. And that was Bernie's stock. Grew up in America. His father had a liquor store on the Upper East Side. Bernie used to tell me his father used to boast that he sold Dr. Belkin his liquor. That was his big yichus. And Bernie, I can't praise the man enough. One of the greatest stories with Bernie is Sunday morning, he was out playing tennis with another very prominent, well-to-do doctor. And then he said to the doctor, come daven at my shul, Kilat Jeshurun, we'll catch a minyan, you'll see what it's like to daven on a Sunday morning. And they come to the shul, and it seems the other doctor, not Bernie, but the other doctor, was not dressed with a jacket. And the gabbai told him, we don't allow anyone in here who doesn't have a jacket for davening. And the guy walked out, and Bernie said, boy, they lost a fortune by pushing this guy away. But I'm just overwhelmed. Bernie worked with me hand in hand, the whole Shvutami operation. Fundraising began in the Cabacal home in 1981. And I just, Yehi Zichro Baruch Hu, one of the greatest people I was privileged to know. Okay, now I just want to mention, I've gotten this question from a number of people. It seems a recording of the Rav is going around where the Rav implies criticism of Israel for acting too strongly or too sharply. And this was recorded in Maimonides many years ago, and evidently it's being sent around now by some of our leftist-leaning individuals. To show Israel, we said. I mean, it's beyond comprehension. 3,000 rockets were shot in on us. Aaron and Malka Rakefet had to go to a bomb shelter on Monday, Yom Yerushalayim, and how much damage was done here, what could have been done. Just think, 3,000 rockets, and the world, the psychological hatred, it's beyond comprehension. But they sent this around. So I want to tell you, the Rav had many influences upon him. I don't know, I'm positive he would not be happy that it's being sent around now as if to imply a criticism of Israel. But you have to know, the Rav was not Rav Kook, and I've lectured about it extensively, and I'll just summarize it in 1 second flat. It's probably one of the more correct witticisms that I ever said in all my years of teaching. And it's very simple. The Rav Kook was a Zionist at the point of thesis. The Rav only becomes a Zionist after the Hegelian dialectics, thesis, antithesis, or antithesis, and finally a synthesis. So Rav Kook, Israel was Eretz Yisrael, the whole concept was the main influence on him. And everything else would fall into the pattern of his understanding of Eretz Yisrael and what was happening and all that went on here with the Chiloniyim. Rav Kook's vision was everlasting and extremely insightful. The Rav was, to begin with, came from a family that Aguda wasn't good enough, Chaim. Then the Rav became an agudist. That already was a major step. Later in life, the antithesis of what he saw with the Holocaust, so he finally reaches the decision to be a religious Zionist, a Mizrachist. But the Rav was never as far-reaching in total as Rav Kook. It came apart, came as a result of a synthesis, not a thesis. And when you understand, this is why the Rav always struggled. I don't want to go into more detail now. I can spend hours on it. But we are big Zionists. Nevertheless, how do we deal with Chaim Weizmann? Rav Kook knew how to deal with him. The Rav had difficulty. My Zionism is not the Zionism of Chaim Weizmann, and the Rav refers to his book, Trial and Error, etc. And you have to understand that there were many influences on the Rav. In addition to living in New England and what today is called the progressive world, the Rav, to a certain degree, was very much at home in what was happening in New England. Obviously, not when it came to halacha and their total degradation of surrender to higher authority, but the Rav was very broad in that sense. In Ivy League College, when Danny Greer said to the Rav, Rebbe, I'm going back to 1960, September now, and he says to the Rav, I graduated Princeton and I took a year off to learn Torah. The minute the Rav said to him the word Princeton, the minute Danny said to the Rav Princeton, his eyes lit up. So I would understand what Nachum Lamb sent to me and asked me about, and others asked me, this was the Rav, and there was a certain hesitancy. And I remember during the war in Lebanon, he told, it is claimed that he wanted to call Yosef Burg on Yom Kippur to tell him their Sabra Shatila, the New York Times, what they were making out of it. We didn't know how bad the time was. Now we're not times what is. What, but then, now we understand the New York Times better. Then we thought it's Devalo Kim Chaim, the New York Times, said something. So the joke was, they told the Rav, they said, Rebbe, that you were willing to call Yosef Burg on Yom Kippur because of Pikuach Nefesh and Chilul Hashem, we have no doubt you would do such a wonderful act. We understand you. But we don't believe Yosef Burg would answer the phone on Yom Kippur. That was they told this to the Rav, and they all laughed together. Manny Hoser, the Rav, I don't know if Fabian Schoenfeld, it was the whole Queens Mafia kibitzing with the Rav. Okay. Adkan, now coming back to our lectures, we mentioned about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach getting married on Purim in Yerushalayim, but it was not Shushan Purim, so Rabbi Grinstein sent me more sources, but halacha lemaisa, if on Shushan Purim itself there are dayot that b'diavad you can get married, because mikadin, there's nothing wrong with it. So, avadram purim prapen Yerushalayim, yesh al mi l'smoch. Now, when it comes to the question of dress, and the question came from Rav Biederman, so I sense that there's a relationship to Rav Menashe Klein, Machatanishaf. They're married, the families. So Mark Weinstein sent to me, the Rebbe mentioned Rav Moshe Mordechai Biederman Zitzal. He had a son, Reb Alta, who was Nifter in 2001. His son, Yaakov Yitzchak, married Reb Menashe Klein's daughter approximately 1985. So now we can understand the tshuva, why he calls him his mechutin. Now, we got involved with the Chatam Sofer. Remember Reb Moshe, Reb Menashe Klein, the Chatam Sofer, Reb Moshe, Igrot Moshe, the Chatam Sofer, the whole question of influence of the Gentiles upon us must be entirely different. And the Chatam Sofer gets involved with the Ramchal and shaving. I did the tshuva a few weeks ago. So I want to mention that in relation to shaving, my Talmud Rav Shmayahu, Nachum Shmayahu Sajak, did some good research and sent me some wonderful makorot, and I've actually spent quite a few hours going through hundreds of pages. A lot of it was maskei nishkachat. I remember in graduate school we discussed this, but the Ramchal, and I just want to mention this briefly, the author of the Masilat Yesharim, that's the Masilat Yesharim that we all grew up on. I need not tell Yitzhak Rubin, when the Mashkiach mentioned Masilat Yesharim, he was shaking with Yirat HaKavod. The Ramchal had a very hard life, a short life and a hard life. And it has to be understood in context. He was born approximately 100 years after the Shabtai Tzvi fiasco. And here's a young man that comes along, and he speaks in terms of revelation, a maggid, his years 1707, 1746, and he has a maggid that's teaching him. And he's writing Sfarim on Kabbalah that the maggid is explaining to him. Well, some of the Chachamim were very worried that it's another Shabtai Tzvi. They were frightened. Klal Yisrael, one century earlier, was terribly burned by Shabtai Tzvi. Remember, we're talking now early 1700s, and just go back 30, 40 years, what happened in Klal Yisrael because of the false Messiah. And this is part of the reason there was persecution of the Ramchal. Beyond the charges of he has a Maggid Meisharim, and he's paskening halacha and writing based upon revelation, but then the whole question of his beard came up. And there's Eliot Horowitz, the late Eliot Horowitz, who was a professor at Be'er Sheva University in Bar Ilan, American origins, a Yale University graduate. I never met him. It's interesting. I only learned about his greatness in this field of research when he died, a relatively young man. His years are 1953 to 2017. And he did a lot of research on the topic. One thing is certain, we have pictures here. This was sent to me by a number of people. This is a Rebbe of the Ramchal. And as you can see, one of his Rebbeim is quite clean shaven and dressed in the style and the fashion that the people dressed at that time. We're talking about Italy. And the Ramchal later in life writes to his Rebbe that he now grew a beard because he's been criticized, and they blame the Rebbe for being a bad influence. It's not just Rebbe, it's his Rebbe Mufak. And he writes to him, I now have a beard. We don't have any picture of the Ramchal, so it's impossible to judge what the real story is. But his life was very, very hard. Ultimately, he had to leave Italy. He ran away. He wound up in Switzerland. And there, he was able to write his magnum opus, the Masilat Yesharim, and he had some peace of mind. Later in life, I need not tell you, the Vilna Gaon, years later in the century, the Vilna Gaon praised the Ramchal. He said that if he could go and see the Ramchal, he would have walked from Vilna to learn at the Ramchal's feet. So I just want to mention this. You can check it out. A lot has been written. But he had a very, very difficult life. And here's a man who all of us were raised on the Masilat Yesharim. And it's hard to conceive of that there were Rabbanim who considered him Rabbi Kairos and put him into Cheirim and made him burn books that he wrote based upon the Maggid Meisharim, etc., etc. Regarding the Shum Museum in Toronto, that in the tshuva of Rabbi Menashe Klein, we get involved, the shoes we wear, Do we have laces? Don't we have laces? Are we allowed to change what the Goyim wear, what the Jews wear? As far as I have seen Hasidic Rebbeim, they wear shoes without laces. And we see from the Gemara, and the shoe museum is one of a kind. And a Talmud of mine, a dear Talmud, Larry Zeifman, writes to me that the Bata Shoe Company, BATA, the largest shoe company in the world for many years, was founded by Thomas Bata in Zin, Czechoslovakia, in 1894. He was not Jewish, but he helped his Jewish employees by dispatching them to foreign locations to avoid Hitler. His son Thomas rebuilt the shoe empire after the Second World War, based in Toronto. And Larry Zeifman actually as a worked as an auditor, he's an accountant, worked as an auditor for this shoe empire in the early 80s. And he does mention that I believe that Thomas' wife Sonia Niewetstein was Jewish, but Lo Aleinu adopted her husband's religious affiliation. Okay, but fascinating what you see in life. And in that museum, there is a chalitza shoe, which made a big impression upon me. The last time I saw a chalitza shoe before that was in Yeshiva University when Rav Gerstenfeld and his Beit Din did a chalitza. It has to be in the early 50s. Finally, regarding Rav Nasha Klein also describes how hats have changed and the different hats. So Jeff Frances, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Frances, S-C-S-C, he says to pronounce it Fran, S-E-S-S, spoke about what Rav Menashe Klein describes, felt, which is made from animal fur, fibers and beavers make very fine hats even today. He was describing felt hats, a fedora, a Hamburg hats that have been worn for 100 years and are still worn. The least expensive ones are made from wool, but the good and most durable are made from beaver. And there was a link to Wikipedia. Everything in life has scholarship, including hats, how they're made, history of it. I need not tell you my classmate, Hagrach, Hagon Reb Chaim, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, is the greatest expert in the world on how they made wine in the Middle Ages and what type of caskets we used for wine. So you see, on every topic, you can do endless research. Okay, but now let me end off this Shaila. And I want to refer you to a recent issue of Jewish Action. Jewish Action is, of course, the publication of the OU. At one time, Jewish Action had a rival in Jewish Observer, which was the publication of Agudat Yisrael. But when computerization took over and you could publish Bamishpacha and come up with magazines of 200-300 pages, various sections, it put Jewish Observer out of business. Jewish Action remains in business, and it's a very important, very fine, high-class publication. It has articles that make you think. In the spring 2021 issue, there's an article exactly on this topic. It's by Rabbi Dr. Ari Zivotofsky, who I know, you all should recognize the name. And what's the truth about the Jews in Egypt keeping their Jewish names, language, and dress? And he's talking about what we refer to, the Medrash, that the Jews were zeicha to leave Egypt because lo shinu their names, their language, and their malbush, and their dress. And he quotes Rav Menashe Klein's tshuva on the topic, and there's a fascinating footnote on page 87, footnote 18. It sort of parallels my chiddush with Yosef's children, Ephraim Manasseh, with Yaakov Avinu that I spoke about last week, and it's based upon a Malbim, accepting as a given that the Jews and Egypts had different style clothing. It led the Sifrei Chachamim to Shmot, Perik Yudbet, Pasuk Lamed Hei, to explain that Egyptian clothes promised by God and then borrowed by the Jews were altered before being worn. So if we follow the Sifrei Chachamim, we now have a source that one of the most honorable Jewish professions is being a tailor. And what this means, they raided their homes during the days of Choshech. You all know the Rashi, the Midrashim here, the Mechilta. During the days of the plague of Choshech, and the Egyptians couldn't see, and the Jews went and checked every apartment, saw where they had beautiful clothes. Then when they're ready to leave, the Egyptians are telling them, take whatever you want, just get out, don't let us die. And the Jews chose the best clothes. The tailors went to work. And only when the tailors were finished did the Jews leave. All right? It's a nice concept by the Sifrei Chachamim. But it's a very nice article by Ari Zivitovsky. In the article, he finally quotes, and this is the source that I want to end off the Shiurim with, a very, very powerful source. And here's why I need the Charlie Hexter, as you will see. And I'm quoting now from Rav Avram Danzik, the Chochmat Adam. All of you know the name, the Chaye Adam, Rav Avram Danzik, Rav Avram Danzik. This was one of the great heroes of the Rav. I remember the Rav just began a Yahrzeit Shiur, just the Rav in his prime. And I remember Rabbi Luchstein saying afterwards in class, see, this was amazing how Rabbi Soloveitchik began. He caught the attention of thousands of people listening. And the Rav spoke about this grocer in Vilna who was a Gon Olam, a little grocer. He had a little grocery store. Rav Avram Danzik was a Talmud Chaver of the Vilna Gon, and he was a Gon Adir. The Soloveitchik family held very highly from his Chaye Adam, which is on Or Chaim, and his Chachmat Adam on Yoredeya. He was a Posek Mufak. And the Rav began, it was a Shir in Chaye Adam, and he began with one paragraph, as I recall, in the Chaye Adam, and based upon the question he asked, he spent 2.5 hours halachically analyzing and coming back to the Psak of the Chaye Adam. Now, the Chachmat Adam in Yoredeya, Klal Pei Tet, the Chachmat Adam and Chaye Adam had their own pagination, their own system of numeration. Klal Pei Tet, and here he goes in how important it is to wear different clothes than the Gentiles. We have to differentiate ourselves. L'havdil otanu, k'mo shekatur v'yavdil etchem min ha'amim. And it's absolutely forbidden. Lo yubash beget hamiyuchad lahem. We're not allowed to wear something that is uniquely theirs. And he too mentions the Chachmat Adam. If I say Chaye Adam, I mean Chachmat Adam, but we're more used to quoting the Chaye Adam. And he too mentions how the Jews, it could be lachatchila that we all dress the same and it's universal. But if it becomes specifically non-Jewish and it has pritzut, then we Jews have to keep away. We should in no way dress like them, and this keeps us different. This keeps us and enables us not to assimilate. Look at the Pew Report. There's an article today already in today's Jerusalem Post by a Talmud Chaver of mine, Rabbi Eliezeri. And he speaks about the Pew Report, and why should we remain Jewish? We speak English, we act like the Gentiles, we live like the Gentiles, we dress like the Gentiles, we don't have Shabbat, we don't have Kashrut, we don't have Karet Mishpacha, we're progressive like the Gentiles. progressive, I'm using the modern word, in other words, saying same-sex marriages, hating Israel, everything that goes, Jews, self-hatred, it's beyond comprehension. Haaretz last week published on the front page pictures of all the Arab kids killed. And they got that from the New York Times. The New York Times had pictures of the few Jewish kids killed. They left out the Jewish pictures. This is Haaretz. So why are we any different than the Gentiles? Of course, we totally assimilate. And this is what he's saying. He's saying separate dress is unbelievably important. But there's one problem, and he raises it here. Look at a map. Lithuania, not that far away from Germany. And all of you know, Germany is where the Enlightenment begins. Any of us dressed in modern clothes, any of us speaking English, nicht Jiddisch, any of us that have doctorates, masters, bachelors, look at the influence upon us. It all began in Germany. Okay, Rav Simcha Phil Hirsch took the German milieu, the German culture, and made it infinitely more positive, infinitely more Jewish. But now you have a real problem. Here, Reb Avraham Danzig is paskening, if you dress like a guy, you're not a good Jew. And Jews from Vilna are going to Germany, going on business. People from Germany are coming to Vilna. Rav Yisrael Salanta, how did the Muslim movement begin? It began in Vilna, went to Kovno, later he goes to Germany, right or wrong. Final years he's in Paris, a very fascinating individual, Rav Yisrael Salanta. And in Germany, they were wearing regular clothes. No difference between the Jews and the Gentiles. Lo shanu bigdeihem, they didn't change. Could very well be at that time in Vilna, at that time in Europe, going back to the 1840s. It's the same time as Reb Yisrael Salanta, going back to the 1830s. Could be at that time, Jews in Lithuania dressed differently. We all saw when the Jews came to America, the Polish Jews, Hasidish dress, the Polish Jews, the Galiciana Jews, the Litvish Jews, some of them went with Langer Begodim, all right. But here we're talking, it was shocking, the German Jews. And then he says something about German Jews, and here I need Charlie either to shake it if this is true or he doesn't know. Vigam, he's evidently very troubled. You don't want to say about German Jews, from good German Jews, Jews who daven three times a day, Jews who put on tefillin, Jews who follow Rav Shmuel Phil Hirsch, you don't want to say about them that they're outright schutzim? So he says about the German Jews, v'gam yadua, sha'af al pikein mishuneh, k'tzat mi bigdeihem, sha'arichim ma'at yoter, urechavim mishel akum. And wow, what a very interesting comment that the German Jews, even if they're wearing non-Jewish clothes, but they go out of their way to see it's a little different. And he describes it, that it's slightly longer. They wear a jacket, the jacket has to be slightly longer than what the non-Jewish neighbors are wearing. They wear pants, the pants have to be a little wider than the way the Jewish neighbors would put the pants on. I can tell you that this is someone Charlie and I both knew very well. For me, he was a Rebbe. For Charlie, he was the Chatan of the president of the Kehillah in which he was growing up. The only time in my life that I saw this halacha l'maisa was Rabbi Yosef Weiss. I remember discussing this problem with Rabbi Yosef Weiss, the son-in-law of Dr. Fall Mahler. His wife was a great-granddaughter of Rabbi Shmuel Phil Hirsch, or a great-great-granddaughter. And Rabbi Weiss showed me he has his suits made to order and the jacket buttons the opposite way. Not the way you buy a normal jacket, the opposite way, exactly the opposite way. A small difference, but a difference nevertheless. I was very impressed as a kid, that much I can tell you. Charlie, is there any truth to this historically? You don't know. You never saw it. Your father wore normal suits? Father wore normal suits. All right, I got to ask Eli Schlesberg. We got to ask him about his father and grandfather. Eli Schlesberg perpetuates his grandparents, his parents' influence. It's very beautiful to see. But and he's an interesting guy, as we'll see in the Monday class. Eli Schlesberg, if you're ever in his home in Baltimore, he has a Shlomo Kalbach room. You follow? So here you have, you say a Yeki. But how much of a Yeki Kalbach was, you'll hear what the Rebbe has to say about it. That may be one of his problems, that there were too many different influences upon him. But very fascinating what Rav Avram Dantzig says. Is there a difference? To imagine to spend money, have your own clothes made. I have a very wealthy friend, he should live me well, in Refuah Shleima, and he showed me years ago, he says, Aaron, you don't understand what it means for me to buy a shirt, what's involved? I said, what do you mean, what's involved? You go to a store, you buy a shirt. He has to have a shirt made to order. They have to bring it tailored. They have to measure. They have to sew. They have to try it on. And then they do the final stitching. Ribbono shel Olam, what it costs, what you go through. But he had his suits made to order. It must be a tailor in Brooklyn. They had a contact. He came from a Hungarian family, Rabbi Yosef Weiss. And it could be a tailor who specialized in making a different type of clothes from Jews. But this is the Chachmat Adam. Very fascinating. Now, by the way, you can find the Chachmat Adam in the standard edition, page 223. And then he tells something which takes us in to one of the worst problems we have faced in modern times, in our own lifetime, meaning my lifetime, Yitz Rubin's lifetime. Charlie, Chaim Maltz, Herbie Maltz, faced the halacha lemaisa. Charlie, you ran away from it. Kiddush Hashem, Kiddush Hashem. V'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. How far does that go? And we know that at a time of the Gezeirah, the Gemara I quoted last week, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, at a time when they're out to force the Jews to assimilate, even if they make you change the color of your shoelaces, you have to give your life. Well, Ribbono shel Olam, what we had with Hitler, if Jews would start getting their life, there wouldn't be a Jew left in the world today. And this halachic problem Rav Avram Dantzig alludes to, he tells a story here, and you can see it, that we had this very problem in Vilna during a war, that they issued a decree that the Jews have to wear Malbish Akum. Vishamati, I heard with my own ears, Mipi Hagon HaChasid Zichlona Levrach, that means the Vilna Gon, She'ama She'yahareg, the Al Ya'ava, that you're chayev to give your life, not to change your clothes. And he says, I heard this from the Vilna Gaon. And he says, V'afshadavad sarachiyin gadol, we have to research it. He's not so happy to tell a million plus Jews, just give your life and not change your clothes. But you see from what the Vilna Gaon said, Tzei ure'ei kama gadol ha'isa b'zeh u'kol balei nefesh yasim hadvarim al libo. And he says, any bal nefesh, if you really care, if you, Baal Nefesh, this also is an interesting concept which we're going to touch upon in the next lecture as well, the next topic. Someone who's more concerned, you're not stam being Yotzei the Halacha, but you're sensitive, you want to do it to the utmost. Take this message to heart. Look what the Vilna Gaon paskened, and certainly be very careful not to dress like a non-Jew. Now, coming back to this question, your Hagve al Yava, well, this question haunted us in the Holocaust. And you all know the whole question of the Warsaw Ghetto. I gave very deep lectures on it. Oh, it must be 20 years ago already. Time flies by, maybe more than 20 years ago, but it seems only like yesterday. I spent 5 years in the Kollel on responsa during the Holocaust. I believe it's all on YU Torah. And tell me, are you allowed to fight the Nazis, throw grenades at them? You know you're going to be killed. Do you know that I can show you literature, I cited in what I'm writing now, that great Talmidei Chachamim came out against the Warsaw Uprising, Chas v'Chalila, you had no right to sacrifice your life, you should have been impotent not to fight. If they kill you, they kill you. And the whole question, when a Nazi says, do something, people gave their lives. Do you have to give your life? It's a very interesting question. Attributed to Reb Menachem Zemba, and this appears in Hillel Zeidman's book, Warsaw, it's an English translation, I think it's called Warsaw Diary. I have the Hebrew, Yoman Warsaw, it's what's it called in Hebrew. And Moshe, Reb Menachem Zemba, is quoted as saying that giving your life for Yiddishkeit does not apply today. Today they want to kill you because you're a Jew. It has nothing to do with being frum and not being frum. And today, lehefech, we have to fight. This is the Kiddush Hashem, fighting back. I want you to know I published a monograph on Rav Menachem Zemba. It appears, I think, in Volume 1, Rakafet Aaron as well. And I got a call from Lissy Davidovich, Professor Davidovich, Zichrono Levracha, was one of the great people on the Holocaust period, literature, teaching in Stern College. And she asked me what my source was. I said, Hillel Zeidman. She said, he's not reliable. She wouldn't. She said, no, that's, she thought I had a better source. I said, my source is Yoman Warsaw. But you can see in the Haredi world until today, they swear that it's impossible that Rav Menachem Zemba ever said that you should revolt, you should shoot, you should kill the Nazis. This is not the Jewish way. All right. I personally totally agree with what Rav Hillel Zeidman, what Rav Menachem Zemba said. It didn't say it, I can't prove. But Ribbono Shel Olam, Bizman Hazeh, when the New York Times, it is psychopathic, their hatred, their enmity for the Jew who hates himself, the Bernie Sanders, multiply him by hundreds of thousands, the Gentiles, it is beyond comprehension. Chas v'chalila, we give our lives, lehefech, strength, dignity. But this is the Chochmat Adam, very, very powerful. Imagine what he quotes the Gaon as saying. But you notice, he doesn't immediately want to agree with the Gaon. He says, Hadava tzarech iyun. I'm quoting him. V'af shadava zeh tzarech iyun gadol. But at least we see from the thought that the Gaon said this, how important it is to dress differently. Now, in this same siman, he goes one step further. And here, tell me, we just celebrated Shavuot. I want to ask you, in the old country, Maisha, where do you come from? Woodmere. In your shul, the young Israel of Woodmere, That, did they bring in flowers, trees, whatever? What did they bring in? They did. And where I come from in the old country, they also brought in flowers, decorations. How are you allowed? Ribbono shel Olam, what is this, Christmas trees in the shul? And here, this is the famous Chochmat Adam. And he says, because this is a goyish minhag, what right do we have to do it? How do we bring in trees, flowers, like Christmas? Whoever heard of something like this? And the Gaon absolutely forbade it. I have to tell you, much to my chagrin, that the shul I daven in Ohel Rivka, which is supposedly Minhag Agra, I know that the first Minyan Shabbos morning, they never sing anything. I asked them 52 years ago, how come you don't sing Kel Adon? Minhag Agra, shul you daven, you don't sing. A famous professor, years ago, once daven Shabbos morning, and the poor guy sang Kel Adon. Did they tell him off? He never came back again. I mean, my personality, you can tell me off, you can laugh at me, I'll say, all right, I'm sorry, I didn't know, I'll come back. This professor never came back again. I met him, I said, world famous professor, the greatest, I don't want to mention his field, I don't identify him. He's considered the greatest expert on one facet of knowledge, he's the greatest expert in history. And whenever they talk about this topic, he's invited all over the world. He always used to look at what I'm lecturing on and say, how do you lecture on so many different topics? And then I Baruch Hashem, I say, I'm multifaceted in what I'm seeking to know. But he's on one, I said, you're still angry at the shul? But he sang Kel Adon. And in the same shul, that everything is Minhag Hagra, and they don't say V'shamru B'nei Ezer Shabbos, they don't say V'yedah B'moshe Et Mo'edei Adar Shem U'B'nei Yisrael. You know what I'm talking about, the singing Friday night, Yontif night, the same shul, I take a look, there are flowers on Shavuot, beautiful flowers, I don't get it. Untveda Ah, as the Rav taught us, either Ah, but take a look at the Chochmat Adam, wow, food for thought. How are we allowed to dress? All right, halacha l'maisa. I have to be honest, it's not goyish dress. It's universal dress. Once it's universal dress, there's nothing pritzut, and there's nothing here that we would tend to say you're not a good Jew. So, Baruch Hashem, I dress as I dress. Which leads me, before I begin the next topic, but it leads me to last Wednesday night, the wedding in Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim. First of all, I have to be honest, I came with a suit and a tie. I could never get the tie on, it was so hot. It's Chafetz Chaim, it's near the coast. I couldn't even get my white shirt. I said, the heck with it. So, and no one said a word, because outside of the Chatan, I think everyone else with every kibbutz, everyone didn't have a tie on. So I got away with it, Baruch Hashem. And it was outdoors, everything is outdoors. But then, now we have the real Shaila. Herbie, let me tell you something. You know me since 1962. And Yitzchak, you know me since about 1953. Right or wrong? And I had a first in my life. I rode on a tractor. Rabbi David Twesky, ask yourself, what's the Rebbe doing on a tractor? The wedding's in a kibbutz, it's in Chafetz Chaim. Beautiful tractor, all covered with flowers in white. They bring the collar, and now the chuppah is over. Baruch Hashem, I've yet to lose a chatan v'kala under the chuppah. The sheva brachas, everything went fine. The kos, everything good. Now we have to do cheder yichud, although maybe half the people there or more don't know what I was talking about. Cheder yichud, it's all svadim, Rambam's psak. Chuppah alone sufficient, particularly with this minig of making a shechiyonu on a talit, where they cover up the chatan and kala with the talit, but an Ashkenaz, daftan vi derebet meoiskelerin dai. What can I do? So now we're going to the cheder yichud. On the track there has a whole little, I don't know what to call it, a sitting area. Chatan v'kala are up front, and in back, yours truly with the two Edom. And there I am for the first time in my life on a tractor. Charlie, let me ask a question. Mutter or not mutter? Mina goyim vet gecheta zaza. Who heard of something like this? A tractor? I'll ask with Moshe Feinstein. Rebbe, when is the last time you went on a tractor? We'll ask the Rebbe, we'll ask the Baron Cutler, ask all the people I spoke in learning with. They'll laugh at me. But all right, tractor, it's universal. Military salute, 21-gun salute, universal. Tractor, farmers, kibbutz, agriculture, universal honor we give the chatan v'kala that they're getting married in a kibbutz. So Baruch Hashem, zachiti, I went on a tractor. Moshe, do me a favor, Yoma, open the windows blowing at me. Close what he opened, and if need be, we can, he turned on the... is that where it's blown from? It's not open here, not open any closer? It's closed? No. Oh, okay. And still here? Do you know if it's open or closed? Appreciate it. Closed. Okay, fine. I'm sorry, the Yom opened the windows, and I'm a little sensitive. Mark Wiener is holding up stripes matzahs. What does that have to do with riding on a tractor? You'll tell me later, Mark. Okay. Adkan, Jewish clothes. Charlie, if there are any old-time yekkers that you know, anyone that lived in 1840, 1850, check out with them what, I mean, you're talking about from Danzig. If Aaron Rakefitz said it, you can forget it. We're talking here of Gon Shebegoinim, that the Rav, I remember the Rav, the Derech Eretz he had for the Chochmat Adam, wow. And he says something like this, that they made the pants wider and the jacket a little longer. Interesting to check out if there really was a tradition like that. In Rabbi Yosef Weiss, I can tell you, I still can see him in front of me showing how his suit... we buttoned this way, he buttoned the other way. Interesting. And I'm told that there are people who make suits like that for Hasidim on purpose. Moshe is telling me, so I got Moshe Mark is marking it correct, Rebbe. Okay. Now we come to a problem. Let me tell you, if you think we have a solution to this problem, it's not so simple at all. So Jack should know where to go. It's Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Zayin, Siman Kuf Yud Chet. And here I can describe the problem before I even give you the sources. It's very simple. For the sake of argument, Rabbi Rubin, you were a chaplain in the United States Defense Forces Army. So let's say once a month, all the chaplains in your area had a learning session together, interchanging ideas. So here you are, you have 21 chaplains coming together, 4 Jewish chaplains, 17 non-Jewish chaplains, including Protestant Catholic, and they're serving a first-class meal, you're all officers. I remember the Israeli army, there was the general dining room and where the officers ate, and at times I ate with the officers. Wow, what a difference. All right, the American army is not a pauper. You're eating kadat for kadin. Well, they know that, they hope that some of the Jewish chaplains, at least we hope, Some of the Jewish chaplains will be makbar and kosher food, the Orthodox, the conservative. You may occasionally have a Reform rabbi too who's makbar and kashrut. So they have set up a table. They contacted the OU. The OU contacted a local caterer that they know to be reliable. And you come into the room where after the meeting and the display and the movies, whatever was shown and the discussion, and now you're socializing. And there are four tables that are non-kosher, regular army food, and one table with a sign, strictly kosher, under the supervision of, and here you are, beautiful table, beautiful food, Kiyat HaMelech. It's like the Queen of England when she invites Rabbi Jacobowitz or other Rabbanim, Rabbi Sachs. So they bring in a glatt kosher caterer. Here you have kosher, non-kosher. Are you allowed to eat there? Jews, non-Jews. One party. You're rubbing shoulders. Wow. You're good friends. Mindrinta l'chaim, Rabbi, let me make a toast to you. Good liquor. Okay. L'chaim, Rabbi. We should all be well, etc. Take it a little bit further. And bring it down to earth. Rabbi Grunstein is rabbi in Nova Scotia. No, he has Balabatim work all over. I saw Seattle, Washington. You work Boeing, tremendous Boeing. Companies, endless companies. The coffee, what's that famous coffee that goes all over the United States? What's it called? I can't hear.
Starbucks.
That they have coffee shops.
Starbucks, no?
Starbucks.
Spell it.
Starbucks. Starbucks. Right. That begins. I was hearing Starbucks. Starbucks. That's right. That's what I was looking for. That begins in Seattle. Jews work for them. Jews work. Microsoft. Who knows what else? The center of the world. Seattle, Washington. Ah. So now you're working, and the Mechabed Jews, I remember the minyan I davened at in Seattle, there was a bus waiting outside, and they told me these people will work, I don't remember if it was Boeing or some other company, they send the bus, take them all to work, they come to work, they all eat a breakfast, and then they go to work, Baruch Hashem. And here you're working, Jew and Gentile, and it's Christmas. And it's Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, big party. Christmas, big party. Everyone comes and they respect their Jewish workers, the Jewish brain, the Jewish know-how, and the Jewish Nobel Prize winners. And what's going on in Israel today with the cure to COVID-19, it's unbelievable. They experimented, I think I read this morning, on 19 patients. And all 19 recovered. And these are people who otherwise would have died. So they respect the Jew, despite the pathological hatred in the world. And here you come to the party, tray food for the Goyim, and a special area for the Jews, glatt kosher. You can't do any better. Hashtia kadat, eino nes. Are you allowed to participate? Wow, this is not a simple question, because here you're dealing, all of you know, we don't drink non-Jewish wine. We have a concept of, you see when you buy in Israel many imported products that have flour, it tells you that it was baked by Jews. No shaylev bishel akum, of afiyat akum. Everything done by Jews. We know the whole question of Chalav Akum. And you come back to Stam Yenim, even where you know the wine doesn't go anywhere near a church. But all these Gezerot, all of Masechet Avodah Zarah, to keep your distance. The Pew report tells us quite clearly, why remain Jewish? There's no distance. I dress like a guy, look like a guy, think like a guy, eat like a guy, drink like a guy. Why remain Jewish? Ultimately, you fall in love. A girl is a girl. A boy is a boy. All right, love, magic feeling. At least at my time it used to be. Who knows what goes on today when sex has been demoted to an ordinary physiological or physical need. And I like the term demoted. I think that hits the nail on the head. So this is a shaila that has, I wouldn't say much, hundreds of thousands of daily implications. So let me quote a basic Gemara. They're actually, this is the basic Gemara. Avodah Zarah, Daf Chet Amud Aleph, right towards the bottom. Tanya Rabbi Yishmael Omer Yisrael Shebechutz La'aretz Ovdei Avodat Kachavim B'Taharahem, that the Jews outside the land of Israel are idol worships with pure intentions. What does it mean with pure intentions? Not meaning to do so. And we find this concept in the Gemara at the end of Ketuvot, Kol Hadav Chutz La'aretz Oved Avodah Zarah. And then there's an emendation, a more correct reading, Ki'ilu Oved Avodah Zarah. And what is the Gemara saying to us? And this theme is all through Chazal and Masechet Avodah Zarah. Here you see it openly. And what is the Gemara saying to us? That when we live in Woodmere, we live in the Five Towns, we live in Teaneck, we live in Brooklyn, we live in Los Angeles, we live among the Gentiles, we lived in Frankfurt, we lived in Berlin, we lived in Vilna, we lived in Kovno, we lived in Warsaw, we lived in Lemsha. Whenever we live among the Gentiles, we are partially Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Willy-nilly, alapenu v'chamatenu, willy-nilly, as the Rav taught me, we have no choice. This is life, this is interaction, intermingling, and this is what the Gemara says, Rabbi Yishmael, that Jews and Chutz La'aretz, no matter where they live, and no matter how frum they are, no matter how good their intentions are, they are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. The Gemara is Malamet Zchut B'Tahara. The Gemara in Ketuvot Ke'ilu. I once met a wonderful Jew in Borough Park who I don't know why he left Israel. I found out he really was a well-known scholar here, a Chassidish Jew. And I davened in this Chassidish minyan in Borough Park, and he was Makari. He was very nice to me, and he had, I don't have to tell you, he called over the Rebbe and the Rebbe's son, and they read some of my books. These were already American-born people from the Teitelbaum family. And he tells me his grandson called him and told him off that Saba Zayda du bist an Oved Avodah Zarah. You're an Oved Avodah Zarah. And he told his grandson, Atat sodeik avol atashachachta tagirsah amitit ki ilu Oved Avodah Zarah. That's the Gemara saying here, but Tara, God forbid, I don't want to say that every Jew in Teaneck is an Oved Avodah Zarah. He lives there, but Tara, but Kedusha. But you can't help yourself. The world influences you. Ketzad. And now they're like, what do you mean? Ovdei Avodah Zarah? How? Ovdei Kachav Mishnasam Mishtaliv No. An Oveda Kachavim, a good man, your neighbor, your next door neighbor, made a party, his son is getting married. Vizimein Kola Yehudim Shabiro. And he invited all the Jews of his city to attend. It's Donald Trump. He loves Jews. The guy running for mayor, Eric Adams, right? They tell me he's mamish an oiv Yisrael. The way the guy speaks about Israel, I couldn't get over it. I can't speak any better. And he's going to retire to Israel. And he's going to buy a home here. And the Jews are coming out in support of him. And he's an Afro-American. And he's mamish understands Israel, understands the Jews. He main kol yidim shibiro. Afalpi, listen to the words. Afalpi she'ochlin mishelechem. Vishotin mishelechem, vishamesh shelechem omeid lifnehem, male aleim akothev kilu avchu achlu mizivchei meitim, shenema v'karalacha v'achalta mizivcho. Wow, let me just explain this. The man went out of his way. Kosher food, kosher liquor, kosher wine, everything separate. And what does it mean? V'shamish alahen? So, look into the Mefarshim, it means they put a God there, that he sees to it, that you don't mix up any of the food. And I can tell you, I know exactly what this means. I think I told you I was once invited to a wedding. I think I was Masada Kedushin even at the Waldorf Astoria. The Waldorf, these were not poor people getting married. It was Noni daughter and the Talmud of mine and the Hashtia Kadat, Eino Nes, Waldorf Astoria. So the caterer, they were my Talmidim, BMT boys. It's a family business. So I said, do me a favor, let me see, how the heck you kasha, what do you do here? You know, it's a good hashkacha, I'm not questioning, but I wanted to see. I told you, this goes back to, it goes back to Rabbi Aaron Cutler with that famous dinner for Lakewood. And they took me in. Do you have any idea how big the kitchen is in the Waldorf Astoria? It's two flights, a city block. All you can kasha is a little area. The oven, Sarah Baron said, you can't even see inside. It goes up. It rotates, it comes down, it revolves. It's beyond words. I turn it up to the highest heat. I know that the Kilat Adat Yeshurin Heksha is mapid. It can't be used for 24 hours. Other hashkachas are samach on 12 hours with some pungent, they throw in bleach or something, a pungent, when they kasha. All right, yesh al mi l'smoch. But I'll tell you what the real problem is. You fence off, they put a rope around the kosher area. The problem is what I've said so many times, you can't bring in your own help. If I could hire some grist guys who want to make a little extra money, I would be very happy. It's unionized. It's the same way it is. How can you watch all over that they don't grab a spoon from the tray fairy? It's right on top of it. You have a little rope. So that's what they mean here, that they had a special mashgiach just to see. I'm quoting the Rishonim. I'm not making this up. This is the pshat, because otherwise you don't understand what the Gemara is talking about. Look into Schaffenstein, the way he explains it, exactly like this, that their job is to see, the mashkichim, that nothing gets mixed up. I'm quoting Schaffenstein, to make sure that their food and drink do not become mixed with unkosher food and beverage from the other tables, from the other guests. So you see from the Gemara that even to go to a party made by a Gentile who loves and appreciates Jews, and there are Gentiles like that, that mamish ohavei Yisrael, that understand us. Someone sent me a clip on the social media, which plays such a role today, a Voight, John, what's the first name? An actor, V-O-I-T, if I'm not mistaken. And he spoke about the Jewish people and the state of Israel and this last war. I wanted to kiss him. I thank God he understands what's going on here. Plain, simple facts. And He loves Jews, and he makes a party, and there's a separate kosher table, and there's a rope around the area, and there's a mashgiach walking up and down that you can't mix up the food. And even then, you're not allowed. And not just not allowed. My v'kara lacha, see, it's a pasuk in Shmot. I can quote the pasuk to you. Perik lamed dalid pasuk tetvav, pentichro brit liyoshev ha'aretz, v'zanu acharei Eloheichem, v'zavku l'Eloheichem, v'kara lacha v'yachalta mizivcho. Chas v'chalila, you become like a guy. And when what does it mean he calls you? Mishat Kriya, that from the minute they invite you, from that moment on, you have to keep away. It's like you get an invitation in the world. I think it's John Voight, the person I saw. But you get an invitation in the mail. The minute you got that invitation, keep away. And not just for the day of the Simcha. Kol Kloten Yom, 30 days, if that Gentile invites you to come and eat. And look into Rashi. It's after the big simcha, after the big affair, after the wedding, after the nuptials, after the engagement, I don't know, after the confirmation. But there's food left over. And for 30 days, you're not allowed to go and eat, because if it's part of the non-Jewish simcha. And you'll see that even for 1 year, if he says to you, I still have food, I'm still celebrating, I'm still happy, my daughter got married, come, drink a l'chaim to me, I know you can't drink wine, we'll drink a schnapps, you still can't go. 1 full year. And of course, this is the way Reb Menashe Klein begins his tshuva. You see, openly, halacha lemaisa, an open gemara. Now, do you start to realize the implications of this? You're living in a neighborhood that's half Jewish, half Italian. Do you know what a block party is? Anyone ever participate? This is part of the culture. We had this in Maplewood, New Jersey. Generally, at the end of the summer, before the fall sets in, or at the start of the fall, all the neighbors come together on the block. Beautiful food, friendship, you're living together. We have to help each other. Yes, Moshe.
This past summer, I was in Bell Harbor, where my wife's from. I was off in the shul, and we were having a block party. There was a band playing.
With a band, the works, a block party, Bell Harbor. Maplewood, South Orange, friendship, Wellsburg in the Newark section, it was all Italian at when I lived there. Beautiful to see, beautiful. The other part of the end of Borough Park, further. How would I describe it? Further south, I believe it was. It's an Italian neighborhood. I was there at a block party. No, are you allowed to participate? And if you don't participate, what kind of citizen are you? What kind of neighbor are you? What kind of hater of human friendship? In plain, simple, halachic language, you are creating Eva. Aleph, Yud, Vet, He. Don't forget that word. You are creating enmity, hatred, the Jew. Superior attitude. No one is good enough for him. Do you start to see the implications here? This is not a simple shaila. Take it a step further now. Yomo achieves Israeli citizenship. I drove him to a mailbox. Okay? Be aware. Eidut Nemana. To mail to the government all his documents. No, we don't have mailboxes near. We got to find a mailbox. Thank God and give it.
No government.
What?
Justification.
Just what?
An application
with his picture. Till we got the picture on, it took me and Sherry, anyone else helping, it was a triumvirate, had to help. We got it on, drove him to a mailbox in Givat Mordechai. Okay? Yomo. He now has citizenship. Well, Yomo can do many things, computer genius. He gets a job with IBM Israel, then they see he's such a genius, they send him to work in Kiev, organize an office there, and there is Yomo back in Kiev, and he has native Russian, native English, native Hebrew. All right, he's capable. He just typed for me this morning in English and in Hebrew. He types unbelievable, capable. And now it's their big holiday, the Russian liberation of Europe, World War II. What day is it? May what?
It's May 9th.
May 9th. And they're having a big party. And they know that Yomo is from, and there are a few other Balei Tshuva in Kiev. Oh, Chaver, comrade, what's the word in Russian? What's the word?
Tovarish,
right. Tovarish, you have nothing to worry about. Here is a kosher table. Under Hashgacha of the Kiev Rabbinate Chabad, beautiful, fine, good, wonderful food. Five non-kosher tables. One kosher table. Is he allowed to eat? What? And you don't go to the party? What are you, anti-Ukraine? Anti-humans? Anti-social interaction? How do you work here? We have to be friends. We have to get along. No, put this into American context. Moshe's father, big lawyer, Park Avenue, big firm, 550 lawyers, out of which 100 are Jewish, etc. Big Christmas party. What, your father's not going to go? Eva, Aleph, Yud, Vet, Hey. And yet, take a look at this Gemara. Take a look at the Halacha. This is what Rav Menashe Klein quotes. I'm getting all upset with this Halacha Gemara. It's a real zelopashur. I hope you understand the depth of what's involved here. We live among Goyim. We work among Goyim. And I'll tell you something else. Lo Aleinu, in the state of Israel, the higher the echelon you get. They go out, in my time, when I came in Aliyah, glat treif. Today, they're mourning the fact that there are more from Jews than ever that are rising, that are playing a big role in the state, as I hope your brother will play. So now, they go out. They have to go to a kosher place. Sometimes they'll bring in caterer. They'll have two kosher tables right here in Israel. You follow? All right, these are all Jews. But wow, what a problem. What a Gemara. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam she'kol nihyeh b'dvaro. Okay, look up the Halacha. Yeridaya, Siman Kuf Nun Bet. Sif Katan Aleph. And just see how this Gemara is formulated. Ove kachavim osa mishta l'chupat b'noo b'to. And Ove kachavim making a big party, the biggest party we make. When a son gets married, a daughter gets married. Asul Yisrael achol sham afilu ochel mishalo vi. Shamash shalo omeid olav umishamesh. That a Jew, not allowed to eat there, even if he is certain the food is kosher, and they have a mashkiach that's standing there specifically to see to it that the food does not get mixed up. And this is exactly the formation of the Gemara. I'll go a step further, but now looking to the Mefarshim, to the Nosei Kelim. Looking to the Shach, Sifkat Aleph, Katav HaPrisha, Tzarech Yiyin, Imnoma Gambahai, Muta Mishum Eva, L'Sameachimo. And here you have, there's a whole literature going back to the Rishonim, coming through in the Tur, coming through in the Beis Yosef, coming through in the Bach, Drisha, Prisha, Mishameva. And we do find, and I'll show you the source, we do find that at times we are more lenient when it's a question of inter-religious relations, inter-racial relations, inter-neighborly relations. We got to be concerned. Yomo has to make a living. He can't spit in the face of all the non-Jews who work with him in Kiev. And this is a real factor. Moshe's father goes to work on Park Avenue. I have a Talmud who's a partner in one of the biggest firms on Park Avenue. Most of the people who are partners in the firm, it's a non-Jewish firm to begin with. It's not a Jewish firm. All right, there are a number of Jewish partners who came in over the decades. But how do you spit in the face of the people you work with, the people you live with, the people you see on a daily, ongoing basis? You live on a street in Borough Park, there can be a fire, there can be a robbery, there can be an accident. You're going to join together. We're all human beings. We have to help each other. The whole concept of a get-together on the streets is a celebration of our friendship, our neighborliness, our humanness, right or wrong, Mishum Eva. So already you should see this issue goes all the way back, I need not tell you, to the Gemara, the Rishonim, and here it is. The Shach already questions, maybe we should apply the concept of Eva. Look into the Taz, also Sifkot Aleph, and the Taz takes issue that how can a Gavra Rabba like the Shach quote the Prishar he's referring to, Gavra Rabba, how can you quote a concept Mishum Eva of trying to be lenient, to take into consideration social, economic factors, if chas v'chalila here, eating together, drinking together, this is what causes intermarriage, you see? You'll understand this a lot better next week. I have to show you, but I don't want to start it today. It'll take us beyond our time limitations. But this is the entire problem. Where do we draw the line? You see, it could very well be that Moshe will say, well, my father goes to a party where it's the top partners of the firm. They're all over 50. They're all mans. They're no women. This is a norm. We're misogynist from the old generation. Women belong at home. We make a living. They have to stay, raise the children, cook. But you'll take Yomo's problem. He goes to a party. There are 37 people there. No one is over 50. The Russian women all work. It's a holdover from the communist era. Some of those women are beauties, Russian women get their act together. They're as good as any French beauty from the old concept of Paris when it was the capital of sin. Today, Paris, the capital of the fourth Arabic state. It's a fourth world country. I have no idea what Paris looks like. People, when I was growing up, Paris, the capital of sin, when the Rebbe wanted to talk about a sinful city, Paris. Not today. They'll decap them. Chop your head off if you're Jewish or if you sin. It's Mohammed, their Lord, Sharira, etc. Wow. But there's Yomo. Oh boy, that's a different type of party. Men, women, beautiful men dressed properly, showing the greatness of what Ukraine has achieved since the communist era and its separation from Russia, etc. And there's Yomo. And look into the Taz. He screams, he shouts, he yells. Wow, you'll marry the girl. The whole concept, if we start eating and drinking together, we have broken down every fence that separates us. And this is the real problem, and you have it on the college campuses. The OU, the Zeif family, millions and millions and millions of dollars have been invested. College campuses, the OU, a couple there, it's not Chabad, it's not Hillel House, it's a couple to work with the graduates of the day schools that they should remain from even after 4 years in Harvard, Yale, Princeton, etc., Rutgers. You have college campus, boys, girls, friendship, everything is open to you. No barriers. We dress the same, look the same. I have to tell you, can make a very strong case that any kid who goes to a different college outside of Yeshiva University, you're only allowed to go if you wear a beard, have payas, black clothes, etc. This is a portable ghetto. No? How many are willing to dress up portable ghetto at YU? There we have some that don't have to be, but they're Hasidish, they feel it. Beautiful. At home, good. Kollel. The Rebbe is a relic from the generation of the Ramchal. But we have beards, payas, gorgeous, fine, good, uniform. But eating, drinking, college campus, the sky's the limit. Okay, let me go one step further. It's a real problem. This is really an insoluble problem. Let me go one step further. As you notice, Yomo has not resigned his job because of the May 6th, is it?
May
9th. May 9th, I inverted it. The May 9th party.
Bigger problem is the New Year's party.
New Year's party?
Yeah, New Year's 9th.
All right, I never knew they celebrated New Year's. That's a religious holiday. What does that have to do with Russia?
It became
a universal holiday. I understand. Like in America, you know how many yeshiva kids celebrated New Year's in my time? How many young Israel celebrated New Year's? Okay, I want to just mention one thing else in this halacha. When you look up the halacha, you'll see they also quote the difference between 30 days and 12 months. And 12 months, if he invites you to have a drink with him, to eat something, all right, if it's he says something slept over from the party, but he doesn't mention it specifically to rejoice with me, to celebrate with me, you're allowed to go. Nevertheless, the Taz says, here, look into the halacha. I'm quoting at the end of Sif Katan Aleph. Ela im kein hu adam chashiv. That the halacha is that an adam chashiv shouldn't go even for 12 months, even if it's not a celebration. Just keep away 12 full months. And the Taz says, mitzad chasiduto. Now what does it mean, adam chashiv? His frumkeit, his piety. And this leads us into a very interesting question. You find this in the Gemara. Rabbi Revel wrote on this topic when he still had time, Lechadesh Torah, before the Depression, he wrote a great deal, Adam Chashev Shaini. You've seen that time and again in the Gemara. See, and that raises a very interesting question, because the truth of the matter is, Eli, there's no concept in Yiddishkeit, Adam Chashev Shaini. We are not Catholics. We don't have two different religions. Generally, religions all over the world operate on two levels. The clergy has one responsibility, and the laity a lot less. Right or wrong? Take a Catholic priest, vows, poverty, abstinence, three different vows, chastity. Tell me, Judaism? Chas v'chalila. Moshe, you can be the biggest gaon and tzaddik in the world, and you can be a street cleaner in Machne Yehuda. Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha obligates everyone equally. Okay? But there is a concept of Adam Chashev. What does it mean, Adam Chashev? So it's not a concept of Adam Chashev. Imagine Yomo becomes the head of a whole division in the company he works for in Kiev. Adam Chashev! Yomo, wow, where are you today? Imagine, the man is making $500,000 a year. I'm not talking ruble, dollars. They drive him around with a chauffeur. Wow, he invented things for the computer. He's fabulous. Adam Chashev. Adam Chashev in this sense means Hasidus. It doesn't mean money, wealth. It means he's from a, it's like the compliment I got. I had a very funny experience. I have a real problem with my morning minyan. It's any minyan I daven with in Yerushalayim, in Israel, maybe in America. They daven too quickly for me. So I begin 5 minutes earlier, Pesukei Dezimra, but it's terrible. But I don't have a solution. So a stranger came into the shul a few weeks ago and sat down. He asked if he can sit near me because there's more light where I sit. There's a lot of light. I see an American. I even remember his name. His first name was Fred. And I never saw him again, never saw him before. And I can tell you, he was a Baal Tshuva. He was a gentleman, had to be in his 70s. How do I know it was a Baal Tshuva? He was davening from an art scroll, English sitter, and I could see he was holding that sitter, and that sitter was marked up. Fine, beautiful, Baal Tshuva, davening, nice, friendly. And he says to me at the end of davening, oh, he says, it was a pleasure sitting near you. You are really a pious Jew. I walked away. I said, "Oh, Baruch Hashem, I got a compliment for davening with Kavanah. I'd rather hear a compliment for knowing Shas and Paiskim and being able to teach Torah, the Kavanah of Tiferet." But all right, he viewed it. Tell me, where do we find, all right, let me see what you guys know. Yomo. Where do we find in the Torah a concept of Adam Chashev Shaini, Mipnei Chazidutu? Something that's a little bit different than what I said. What I said is correct. No, you just had Pashat Naso. What did you have in there? A Nazir. Right or wrong, a Nazir. Oh, Rikai Shavailim, a Nazir. So you see, what does a Nazir mean? I can tell you a lot of people have written on an Azir. Let me give you what I heard from the Rav that I consider, and they tell me Rav Kook said something similar. I consider this a mita shel Torah. Look, 90% of us live a normal life, a normative life. Let me use that word. A normative life. And we're happy. We observe Shabbat, Kashrut, Taref Mishpacha. As my wife says, I don't understand the feminist. I have enough to do. I don't want more. Remind me to tell you a story right when I finish what happened at the wedding. You'll understand what I'm saying. So my wife said, "Well, I have enough." I know a lady whose father was one of the greatest Gedolei Yisrael that I knew. And she says, she and my wife think exactly the same. I hear them, they're the same age. And they're maledicting the feminists. They're crazy, we have enough. And she told a story about her mother. Her mother was a Rebbetzin, the daughter of a great Rav, the husband, wife of a great Rav. And that's 90% of us. There are some people that want a little more. So Nizirut was a solution. If you want that little bit more, God said, I'll give you a solution within the context of Torah Hashem. And he gave special halachot. And yeah, Eli had a beard. He was a Nazir for 30 days. Fine, he felt happy, felt good. Felt, you follow me? It gave vent to your search for Hasidut. A little bit more. That's the halacha here. That if you're an Adam Chashev Shiny, that if you have that, and that's why the Taz is so careful. What does it mean? Adam Chashev Chasiduto. Doesn't mean that he's making $500,000 a year. It means he has that kvetch within him, that search within him, that push within him. Let me be a little bit more pious, a little bit more different. So he can't, even for 12 months, can't go near the Gentile feast. Look into the halacha, look into the source, you'll understand exactly what I'm saying. What I wanted to tell you about feminism, before I summarize, I'll tell it to you. So I'll tell you what else happened at the wedding. And this really is funny. So I come under the chuppah, and I have to see everything is right or right. There's a microphone, and there are two kosot, a nice bottle of wine. You need two kosot, the kedushin, and afterwards the sheva bracha, two separate kosot. I don't want to go into details now. I only lectured on it for a year. How do you have a rusin and sheva brachas back to back, and you make two separate brachot? A very interesting question. Okay. So, and then I see two kosot wrapped up in silver foil to be broken. Two! I said, what's going on? So I say to the, and I know the kala. She's marrying my grandson. I met her a few times. I love her. I'm impressed. Beautiful, wonderful, wonderful girl. Yiddishkeit, Chafetz Chaim, and getting a bachelor's in chemistry. And I say to her, at gam feminist, and we laugh, and it bothered me. Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim, because I read that the feminists want to break a cup too under the chuppah, two cups, one for him, one for her. So after a day after the wedding, my daughter heard I was. She found out why. Many times it happens. The chatan stumps on the cup, and instead of breaking it, he kicks it away. It flies away. So they have a backup cup. If that happens, you can put it down immediately. And at the start, it's Tavili et akol, Voshes and Afalos. And that way, he breaks the curse. So Baruch Hashem, when my daughter told me that, I felt better. At least in Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim, they haven't reached the stage of two kosot to be broken under the chuppah. My dear students, what do we do today? All right, I dedicated the shiur in memory of Dr. Bernard Cavacow. He was one of a kind. That's all I can tell you. In New York Magazine, whenever they wrote up the top doctors, every year they have an issue, the 100 top doctors in New York, their various specialties, Bernie Cavacow was always number one among the oncologists. And I was in his home many times for Shabbat. His phone doesn't stop ringing. They're calling him from all over the world with the chemotherapy, how much to give, how you give it, how you divide it up. I mean, the man was a gon in his medical practice and a gon in his chassidut, Adam Chashev Shiny in the full sense of the word. And he and Seal, six wonderful children, and what he did, what they did, I cannot tell you the dedication to Russian Jewry. Yomo, when you hit it big and become an Adam Chashev, you have to drink a l'chaim in memory of Seal and Dr. Bernard Cavacow. Got it? Don't forget. their love, oh God, inspirational to me. It was a mutual admiration society. So what did we do today? All right, we finished out the Chaye Adam, very powerful. And yes, there's no question if we can go to university and dress like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, no one ever suspected him of assimilating in Berlin. And that I heard, Eli, with these ears I heard from the Rav. The Rav said he went to university, no one knew who he was, no one knew his background. He was just like you saw, if you ever saw a picture of the Rav at university in Berlin, he looked like one of the boys. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you couldn't mistake him, you understand, with the Bekesh, this Gevender Rebbe, and he had the key to the mikveh, and he fasted Monday, Thursday, and went to mikveh every day, Bekedusha Batara. The Rebbe was the Rebbe. I just hope his followers don't disgrace his memory with the messianicness, and it's very sad to believe you come back from the dead. I mean, this is Christianity, it's not Judaism. Professor David Bergeron is absolutely right. But my Talmidim that correspond with me from Chabad, they gave me Musa that in Venice I davened in the one daily minyan there. Turns out the rabbi is a messianist. I told you, on the wall was a picture of the rabbi, on the Aron Kodesh a picture of 770. But my son-in-law wants to see, he's also makpid on a minyan. I'm not the only one. I have a sons-in-law who are makpid on minyanim. All my sons-in-law. So Danny said we have to daven. And everyone davening there was normal. But I got my face smacked by my Talmidim. They wouldn't have davened there. All right. There was no other minyan. It's a weekday. It's not Shabbos. Shabbos there. About 3 minyanim in Venice today. Okay. But the clothes, did they make the clothes any wider, any longer in Germany? That is fascinating. I mean, this is Rav Avram Danzig speaking. It's not a fly by night. And we're talking, he wrote this, he published it. I would believe it's correct. I would love to know if I can go back on my space machine 100 and 200 years, 180 years, and meet a Jew in Germany and ask him, show me your pants, show me your jacket, I want to measure it. Okay, then we began a new topic. We'll come into the heart of it next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. These are topics. This is all me'inyan li'inyan bi'oto inyan, from the clothes to the eating. It's our relationship with our non-Jewish neighbors. The Pooh Report brought to life with the halachic implications. And that's the shaila that Rabbi Asher Klein gets. That's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And that's the first Psak in the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya that I wanted to show you. Are there any questions from the wonderful students sitting in front of me? Okay. Yomo, how do we, you turn it off now and put me into the world? Until when are you here?
I'm here on Thursday.
This Thursday, there is some. I can see already, I'll lend it to Shurim already by June 15th, everyone has to be out. Okay, but this week we have Shurim and next week we have Fishua.
Rebbe,
yeah.
You mentioned riding on a tractor. From what I was told, that before the stroke, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, when he went to the wheat field for the street,
strikes,
he would climb up on the combine machine. Yeah, you know, the big tractor, the harvester, and he would sit in while they were harvesting the wheat.
So you
find the tail.
Okay, so you're telling me I'm in good company. That's what you're telling me. Yeah. Baruch Hashem. But I have to tell you, it was really thrilling. I've been Masada Kedushin many times, but I never had an experience like this. The tractor pulls up again. And it takes the Chatan Vakala, and they signal the driver to wait. The rabbi has to get out, and I called the two Edom. I didn't want to lose the two Edom. And they went around and around and around, and then we reached the Yichid Edom. I have to tell you, I was very impressed with my grandson's friends. These were all from Hesdi Yeshiva and the army with him, and Sfardim. And I was so impressed with the Yirat Shemayim. And they thanked me so much, because I don't want to go into details now, but I wrote in the Ketuvah, Meya Elef Shkalim Chadashim Shel Medinat Yisrael. and they thanked me for stressing. So I mentioned to them that I'm a Talmud, and my Rebbe is gave the drasha, which was later published. I trust you studied it. Kol Dodi Dofek. A Yemenite kid jumped up. Atat Talmid Shalarab Salavetchik. He wanted to kiss me. He knew the drasha by heart. So I had such a good feeling. You have no idea. Ach, we have a lot of good in Israel. Don't let the difficulty undermine you. I think I hit the nail on the head with Bennett. That ultimately, do you feel more at home with Meirav Micha'eli or with a Jew from Meir Sharon? And that's the heart of the issue. To me, it's the heart of the issue. I think I'm right. I can't swear. I think I'm right. Okay, we'll see what happens. The Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world, but that's only after we do everything we can do, Yomo. Don't quote me out of context. Yeah, go ahead.
Rabbi, a couple of things quickly. When you said the two glasses, I thought you were going to say that one was for Bais Rishon and one was for Bais Sheni.
No. That's a mechnach nishkehet.
John Voigt is heavily involved with the Noahide community, with Bnei Noach. And you know who wrote the Sefer on Sheva Mitzvot, Bnei Noach? Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's cousin and namesake.
Aaron Lichtenstein. I know him. He lives in Borough Park.
He's a
Yiddish Sadi.
I saw him here at Shabbos Meal about 2 years ago together, but I knew him through two things before, and I was at one of their conferences.
And tell me, wasn't he a professor of English literature?
I don't remember what he taught, but he is a professor.
I think he taught English.
In fact, there was a Rav in New York who mixed up the two of them. He quoted him and thought it was the other Rav Aaron. And I remember emailing this Rav, and he said someone else also had just told him that they're two separate people, that they're cousins.
Which Rav are you talking about?
There was a Rav in New York, I'd rather not mention who it was, who quoted...
It's not a
professor.
Nothing. You don't mean Rabbi Soloveitchik.
I'm sorry.
You don't mean when you say the Rav to me, I think of Mori Urebi, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik.
No, there was a rabbi in New York, a shul rabbi.
Okay, I hear.
Who's well known, who quoted.
Mixed up the two Rav Aaron Lichtensteins, but that
thinking that it was Rav Aaron.
Yeah, but that's nothing.
I looked at the Chachmas Adam in Shara Yisrael Veheter. I didn't find the source on that. But I can do that later.
What do you mean?
Rav Yosef Weiss, aren't Bekishes and Kapatas always buttoned the other way?
Right, correct. But that's made specifically for Jews. And I heard...
I think it might be a Shiloh Simas Isha because...
Because they're buttoned the other
way. ...who were dressed by other people, which is why that they reversed it.
And I think it has to do with Minogoyim to have different clothes. And I know that their tailors, at least in Brooklyn, I know you can get a suit made to order that buttons on the other side, the opposite of the waist.
There's a story that Rabbi Blech, who used to be in Oceanside, was Hong Kong, I think on the way back from Australia
right.
at some point, and people told him, you have to get a suit made, as long as you're there, you have to get it. It's very inexpensive. Get it. So he goes there, and he's trying to think how he's going to explain shotness to the guy. So he says to the tailor, I have allergy. I know how wool and linen in the suit. And the guy looks at him in the face and says, you know have allergy, you Jewish.
Ah, beautiful. Yeah, I know about that. I remember Manny Hosa. Used to, whenever he was in Hong Kong, he would get suits. And when we were there going to Australia or coming from Australia, they were touting, it's the word they used, right in the airport, come get the suit, you can order it now, it'll be ready by tomorrow morning, in other words, before you leave, etc., etc. But all right, I'm not such an expert traveler that I'm going to waste time getting a suit.
Left once said he saw a sign there once that said, our price is lower than 47th Street photo.
Could be. The Chinese...
In that they, Yehorek Dal Yavor, there's a difference between Shmad and Kilayon. When it's Shmad, you do it. With Kila Yom, when they're trying to kill you, you dafka do the opposite.
Yeah, well, with the Holocaust, it could be that it was not shmad, because Hitler didn't give a damn whether you put on tefillin or didn't put on tefillin, whether you machaluk Shabbos or shaymi Shabbos. Could very well be that there's no Kiddush Hashem involved, and self-survival, and nowadays we Jews, we have to be the most powerful army in the world and know how to use might within Seichel. Not that we had these riots in Lod and to kill a Jew in the year Tashpa. It's beyond words what has gone on. The whole police force here deserves a demerit, and it has to be resuscitated and increased, and the concept of when you open fire has to be widened, not limited to reach the point where they're a second away from shooting you and killing you. God have mercy. And the throwing of rocks, anyone who throws a rock has to be accused of attempted murder. I lost a student to a rock thrown at him in Hebron in the 70s, Glatt. It's a famous story. Died as a result. Lo aleinu, a dear student. A BMT boy. God have mercy what we go through. And our politicians and their seichel. I don't know. It seems that the politics brings out the worst in the Jew, not the best in the Jew. But okay, I have no right.
One quick thing. I told it to Rav Herschel Schachter, and I told it to Richard Joel also, when they were going to Italy. You mentioned Venice. I suggested they cater Sidarim in Pisa in the tower, because everybody could eat sitting up straight. But they have to lean the other way tomorrow.
Mark, I never knew you were a stand-up comedian. Everyone here is standing up and laughing. Okay, kala kavod. Any other questions? I do have a student who happens to be a stand-up comedian. One of his professions, among others, but is a serious stand-up comedian in his prime. Today's a little older, maybe has a little bit more seichel. And Seinfeld, as I've said more than once, I'm sorry he didn't come study with me. I taught his cousins. His mother, unfortunately, married an Ashkenazi. He comes from Sephardic background. They're all from Shomer Mitzvah.
Terry Sephardic.
No, he's half Sephardic, his mother, but she married an Ashkenaz, so it's the usual story with the American Ashkenazim assimilated, etc. His first cousin was one of my top students ever, and she married another Talmud of mine who was at Tzaddik Yisrael. I don't mention their names, they're well known in the Flatbush community. Tzaddikim Yisodei Olam. But all right.
There was a Beth Seinfeld, is that the...
No, forget about it. The girl was not named Seinfeld. She was a first cousin. The mothers were sisters. All right, 1 second. Nachum, you have anything to say? And we're going to sign off. We can't hear Nachum. No, I can't hear you. I unmute. Ask to unmute. What's the matter? Can't hear him. Okay, we can't hear you. Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya. We have to clear the room here.
And
Yashikayach.